Good morning. Today is Thursday, the 26th of January. Oh, happy birthday, Winston. That's why you're here, Rod.
Really?
Because it's his birthday today.
He's got the day off.
Yeah. Happy birthday, man.
Yeah, he used to think it was on Super Bowl Sunday. Wrong.
Missed that one.
Yeah. Well, you've missed a lot of Super Bowls lately, haven't you?
Yeah, we usually work on Super Bowls.
Yeah. There's no need for you to watch it because of the participants.
Oh. You're not going to make some
hook,
a Saints fan.
Hook, line, and sinker on that one, huh?
You forgot to introduce your
Paul
guest.
Kraft from the California Highway Patrol, incognito.
I think when we started talking about the Saints, it kind of became clear who was here.
Yeah. Became clear in
one
a very
of
little
two
interest.
Saints fans in Humboldt County, maybe. I don't know.
Are you ready for Why Do I Say That?
Yes, sir.
All right. Step on it. Why do we say step on it?
Step on it?
Yeah. This is not in the in the bug eradication business.
I think of stepping on the gas pedal in a car, and that just seems like a logical, you step on it with your foot to make it go fast.
Okay.
Or.
You going to stick with that?
And under the speed limit.
Yeah. Safely.
Yes.
For
safe enough for the for conditions. Prevailing conditions.
Yeah. Someday we're going to flip jobs.
Look at that. We got some safety info in already.
Yeah. Beautiful. Engineering changes enabled motorists to pick speed up rapidly before World War I. Some models still used hand throttles to regulate the flow of fuel, but most employed the relatively new foot feed, not yet commonly called an accelerator. Known by whatever name, the foot-controlled mechanism freed both hands for steering. That meant a driver could keep a car in the road even when moving from 10 to 40 miles per hour in seconds. Reporting such an exploit, an autoist was likely to talk about having stepped on the gas. Regardless of whether or not you drive a car with a foot feed, when planning to speed up action of any sort, it's customary to announce intentions to
step on it.
See?
I feel like you kind of gave me a layup there,
well, you
but
know
I appreciate
what?
It.
And so did Poole get one last night to win the game. Oh boy!
Nice transition.
So how did you? I mean, we have we talked since the earthquake? Did you?
Gosh,
do
it? I don't remember what date it was on.
Yeah, I think you were.
I was here with Victor last month.
Yeah.
I think it was right before.
It was before the windstorms, though.
Yeah.
So how did you guys fare? I know we talk
for
about
us,
chainsaws in the back seat sometimes.
Yeah, I think we did talk about it. Our personal house was okay, but, you know, office had stuff rattled around. But mostly it affected the guys working.
That's what I think with windstorms and things of that nature and slides now, too.
Oh, man. Yeah, that's been pretty bad.
How exciting has it been for the troops the last couple of weeks?
It's been busy. Especially working in the office, and I see the reports that come through and occasionally helping and reviewing them. It feels like the number of crashes are definitely up, and a lot of that has to do with debris in the roadway.
Swerving to avoid or running over?
I think at night you tend to not be able to see it quick enough, which is why we talk about reducing your speeds when you're especially driving around here. You can't see as far. We get a lot of fog and reduced visibility along with it just being dark out. If your headlights aren't great, you know, there's so many factors with the rocks and the trees in particular right now. Caltrans has been and the county roads have been very busy keeping that stuff clean as quick as they can. The roadway flooding, that's affected some people and trying to get through where they shouldn't or hitting a lot of standing water and losing control.
Oh, so you've seen a lot of cases of hydroplaning?
A couple, yeah. Not a lot, but there's always some. That's inevitable.
Yeah. And I think everybody kind of gets in their routine.
Yeah. It shouldn't be inevitable. I mean, it should. It's preventable, so it should never happen if we followed some of the advice that's shared and slowing down and using caution or staying off the road when it's bad. But, you know, we appreciate the efforts that have been made to this point. Let's keep doing better.
Rah, rah. Yeah, that sounds like a Saints fan.
Always got to get support, push forward.
Let's see, you could throw it back at me as a Raider guy. and really just kind of pile on. But so far, your restraint is
that's not our
admirable.
Speed. We are saints, so we love all. We support all.
Go to Mass on Sunday.
Yeah, but we want to win and crush everyone too.
Yeah.
I say we, like I'm part of the team, but
part
we
of
know,
the team.
We know.
Listen, you got the merchandise. You're part of the team, right?
That's right. My coffee cup this morning.
With the slides and things of that nature, do the troops find most of that, or are there call-ins that report most of those slides? Because you don't have that many eyeballs out there,
right,
on a regular basis at any one time. So I would think that there's a lot of call-ins that are providing that information.
There is. The public does a great job of calling it in between the 911 calls and then our public dispatch line, people utilizing those to call it in. It's rare that we show up on scene first, because by default, once an officer gets to one of those locations, they're tied up there because we have to do traffic control until Caltrans can maybe take over for
the rocks,
hard closure,
rocks,
try to clear stuff. So just by default, we get tied up with one and there's multiple calls coming out. We do try to get more bodies out, in an incident where, like the night of the earthquake and all the power's out, myself in special duty, some of the other officers, supervisors that aren't normally on the road, everybody's grabbing a car and getting out on the road to try and find the hazards and see where we can help and where that's needed.
So how do you determine, Paul, in that kind of a scenario, I'm thinking signal lights that are out.
Right.
Okay. You've got a tree that maybe is on the shoulder, but not really there yet.
Right.
You've got all those other challenges that are unique. How do you determine which one is the best spot or utilization of you or of the next guy?
And that's where there is a huge input for multiple agencies coming together and the community, because you'll have people come out on their own, civilians helping out Caltrans,
oh,
the county
okay
roads,
to do?
And us. Absolutely. Okay. Just do it safely. We don't want anyone to
don't stand in the middle
themselves.
Of the street with black on black and a hoodie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that allows us to be able to prioritize and let other people help out too.
Just kind of use common sense.
Yeah.
What to do.
County roads does a great job of getting out to the lights and the flooding in the roadways.
But they still don't have enough crew.
No.
Yeah.
No, they're still limited.
Yeah, Rex was saying they're at half staff now. Compared to where they were about 10 years ago. It's 8:19.
Murphy's Markets has everything you need to get through your day the healthy way. From drinks to snacks and everything in between, right now, Amy and Brian coconut water is only $1.99. Brew Dr. Kombucha drinks are also just $1.99. And Annie's homegrown products are $2.49. A 6-ounce Yoplait yogurt is only 79 cents. And don't forget about chicken of the sea tuna, 4 for $5. Get a boost for your day by stopping by Murphy's Markets, more than a grocer, your neighbor since 1971.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Times, 8:23. We're back talking shop this morning with Paul Kraft. Paul, before the break, we were talking a little bit about the response and what we can do and what we can't do as citizens, let's say power outages, windstorms, things of that nature. What are some of the things that you suggest we do and where? And what are some of the things that people are often apt to do that might not be the wisest thing?
Yeah, so it's a... It's a tough one because we want people to be safe. We would love to be able to, us and the responding agencies, be able to handle everything and keep citizens safe or from having to do any work. But in a rural area like this, it really does take the help of everyone and sometimes require it. If they're going to get out of the vehicle, if you're in the roadway, having yourself as visible as possible and being as safe as possible. And that might mean if there's a tree down across the highway, you need to be paying attention to the traffic coming up behind you or cars coming up behind you, because maybe on the other side is not going to matter because you have a tree between you. So watching behind you, high visibility with lighting, flares, cones, a vest. So for us, our policy requires us when we're out at a scene, put on this bright yellow reflective vest to be seen.
Like one
visible.
Of the Caltrans vests, that yeah. kind of thing?
Yeah, it's highly visible, one of those high-vis vests. And as long as it's an active scene, we should have that on and be visible. I have no problem throwing that thing on when I get somewhere because I've been through an incident where I was hit before. I know how important it is to stay safe and visible on the side of the road and watch for what's coming up behind you.
You got tagged once?
I did, yeah, here in Beatrice Flats about 11, 12 years ago. Longer story for another time, but it's a...
Well, we got 7-8 minutes. You know it's not... You better not take it longer than that.
Okay. Well, maybe we'll come back to that one. Okay. It does reflect on this, though, and being safe when on the side of the road. We encourage someone that has the knowledge and abilities. So if you know how to run a chainsaw and you carry a chainsaw with you and you can safely cut up a tree and get the debris out of the roadway, then, yeah, by all means.
Or just dragging branches?
Yeah. Dragging branches out of the road. Yeah. There are plenty of times where we show up to a roadblock or something in the road that could easily be moved out of the road. But there are a lot of people that don't feel safe getting out, or you have kids in the car. And in cases where it's not safe or you don't feel like it's something you can do, either moving on to a safe location or pulling to the shoulder, hazards on, stay in the car with your seatbelt on. Because someone comes up behind you and they suddenly see this hazard, they lose control, spin out, crash into your car. We have a fair amount of those types of crashes that do happen over the years.
I would think that the temptation is, okay, if I got four cars behind me, and then you hear about some of the stories in the Midwest where there's a 125 car pileup.
Yeah.
Because somebody hit somebody and then the chain reaction just works through the whole line. Is there a safe distance between rigs? I mean, you come up to something like that, keep a couple of car lengths, more than that? How to avoid, stagger it maybe so you're not in a direct line, maybe you're offset?
Yeah, there's probably nothing written, but my recommendation would be to have enough space between you and the vehicle in front of you, where if you're sitting in your car, and I've had to do this before, if I'm watching my rearview mirror for a car that may be coming in too fast, or it allows me to either get on the gas and move or to have my brakes on or to prepare for an impact. I've had those things happen, and that would be the safest thing, having enough space that would allow you to maneuver or move out of the way if you needed to.
So if you had a whole line or a series of people that were doing that, I would think that would at least break the chain.
Well, in most cases it would be, you may affect, if you have a line of five cars and the back one gets rear-ended, it might only affect a couple or three cars. So if you're at the front of the line and you've got six cars behind you, you're in a much safer situation to be able to remove a hazard from the roadway or help with something. And then if we're talking about a hazard where there's a vehicle that's crashed or somebody is, trapped in a car or someone needs emergency help, those are decisions that you make, in the spur of the moment there. Be as safe as possible, but being mindful of, helping someone that's in need. And these are things that we talk about in our high school classes with our Start Smart programs and Impact Teen Driver programs. We start talking about these types of things with student drivers or teenagers that are getting ready to drive, because it's important that they know at a young age too and carry that on and pass that info on. It becomes a cycle of sharing this information through generations now, and then showing by example to our kids that are in the car too of what to do in these types of situations. So.
I know that there are go bags that, in theory, everybody has. So if there's an earthquake and you're going outside, or if you have to leave for whatever reason, you grab it and you're running, right?
Right.
Fire is probably the one that's going to be most prevalent for us that we can prep for. Is there the equivalent of a go bag for what should be in your car when you're driving?
I'd say the stuff that we talk about when we get into our winter weather and we have these conversations where you're keeping some flares, spare batteries and a flashlight. Not necessarily a rechargeable flashlight. I think it's important to have one that runs off of batteries that can be replaced and not have to be charged. So I have an old school D-cell. Yep, keeping that in there. Warm blankets and water for sure, but it's real easy to throw in some snacks too, a little protein bars or snack bars, things that can help you subsist if you do get trapped or stuck out in the hills somewhere in the snow. But those would be the most important ones.
Yeah, and rotate your snack bars. Yeah. Of course, yeah, if you have kids you're driving
regularly.
With, you probably, it's more of a reminder thing than a
double check to make sure they're still there.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, look, wrappers.
Yeah.
KIFS News and Information Time is 8:30.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
And these kids who come, they become Americans before a lot of Americans become Americans.
Now, here's your host, Lars Larson.
Hey there, it's Lars Larson. Join me for the Lars Larson Show, weeknights 10 to midnight. Honestly provocative talk radio on KINS.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Time. It's 8:35. We're back talking shop this morning with Paul Kraft from the California Highway Patrol. Paul, you said flares. You know, and I, not being that conversant or familiar with flares, I see them as something that is very volatile.
Yeah.
That can go boom. And if you have them in the trunk or that area, that tends to be about where the gas tank is too.
Yeah.
Okay. So with that as a preface, if we have flares, how many should we have that would be viable? One or two? 10 or 12? At what point, you know, if you're pulled over for speeding and yeah. somebody sees 35 flares in the back, you say, well, you know, I just like to help out during windstorms, you're going to get a kind of funny look unless
right.
you know the officer.
If you live in Bridgeville and you experience a lot of road closures and hazards out there and crashes in the middle of the night, because we'll have citizens from out in that area come by occasionally and ask for some flares. It may not be unreasonable to have a box of flares or a dozen or so in the car. Most people don't need to carry that many with them, but they're designed to be transported safely. I mean, we carry one or two boxes in the backs of our cars with all this equipment and stuff, and it's very safe to transport. There's caps that cover the end that lights up. It requires a bit of friction to ignite them. And we can help demonstrate for someone if they wanted to come by and get some flares from us. I imagine that we could take the time also to show them how to safely use them and set them. There are also, there's videos online to help you with that stuff too.
Maybe store them properly in the rig.
And to store properly. Yeah. So keeping them, you don't want to store them with the cap off, allowing them to bounce around in the back of your car. So it's creating that friction that lights them. But they can, they're very
safe.
You just
kind of like strike it on the pavement? Is that enough?
So the cap has,
it has like a
sandpaper top on it that's covered with another cap. So you would take the big cap off, and then there's a smaller cap that comes off that has that rough surface, and they can ignite off of that. It is possible to ignite it off the roadway in certain conditions, but when it's wet and if it's not just right, it's hard to light.
The friction is lots of like mold.
Yeah.
Green stuff that grows on it.
Like a match, you can just flick it on your tooth and light it. No, just kidding. Kids, don't try that at home.
Yeah. I'm sure it's happened in the past.
But, you know, much safer than that is they sell very good LED lights and triangles and flashers and little hockey puck size LED lights. And those are really good to have. And that would actually be more encouraged to keep with you. Much easier to store and keep. They're replaceable, you know, long-term use. You're not leaving that molten lava stick on the side of the road. So it becomes much more safe for the environment as well.
I love the way you put yourself in that corner. But I would think that it anything along those lines will help.
Right.
How do you space them out? I mean, I know sometimes when you're driving through twisty turnies, it's like 5 miles in advance there are flares. Right. And pretty soon you go, well, I guess that was over, and you start picking up your speed again, and there's the event.
Yeah.
And that's not too cool.
There's not like a, I guess when we do our training, we have a practice pattern and we talk about good spacing. There's not like defined spacing, but there is good spacing and patterns to lay out. It may depend on the type of roadway, the location of the roadway. So if we're in a curve, it also might depend on if you're out there by yourself or if an officer is laying out a flare pattern for you while you're assisting at the crash. If I am in a curve and I'm by myself, I do want to get a flare back to warn traffic coming around that curve. But I may have to run back there, throw one or two down real quick, and then get back to the scene. But if I have the time...
Because you got both sides you got to protect.
Right. Well, in some cases, right? You got to go on both sides. If I'm helping someone or if I have an extra officer, that officer can help make the scene safe and get a much further back flare pattern, warning cars. Because you want to give people, if you're setting down a flare right next to where you're working at, it's not going to do really much good, right? Other than make you visible right before they hit you. You got to get back and utilize it safely. You want to give a warning to oncoming traffic, right?
You've been a trainer, that huh? Was, yeah, so they can see that expression of shock and amazement.
Yeah.
I know what you're doing, though. You're shucking and jiving so that you don't talk about out at CR.
I know
what you're doing. You've been around here too long. KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:40.
Hearty and healthy foods are abundant at Murphy's Markets. USDA Choice Boneless Beef Chuck Roast is now $5.99 a pound. USDA Choice New York Strip Steak, $15.99 a pound. And USDA Grade A Boneless Skinless Chicken Thighs are only $3.99 a pound. Complement this with a Greek salad, now just $7.99 a pound, topped with Kraft Salad Dressing for only $3.75 for a 16-ounce bottle. Murphy's Markets, more than a grocer, your neighbor since 1971.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time, 8:45. We're back talking shop this morning with Paul Kraft, final 8.5 minutes of the show.
Woo! It's been a good one so far.
8.5 minutes. Ample time.
Okay. What you're wanting me to tell the story then?
Yeah, well, I think it illustrates whether cops aren't perfect.
Right.
Or that there is reason why we talk about the safety and paying attention and that kind of thing, because, you know, it goes from theoretical to personal.
Right. It's a story that I've shared multiple times over, and I use it in teaching vehicle pullover classes in the past with new officers or officers in training and with students in the high school classes too, because it's an important story. Even though it was a law enforcement thing going on, it just really has to do with being on the side of the road and the dangers of that. And my partner and I had stopped on a graveyard shift in the middle of the night to help a van that ultimately had run out of gas, and they were waiting on someone to bring them gas. My partner's talking to them at the window, passenger side window. This is in Beatrice Flats, and it's on a straightaway going southbound.
For folks that are unfamiliar, it's just outside of CR.
Yeah, so we had just come down Hooked and Grade going northbound, and there's a slight curve in the road that continues, and then right as it straightens out is where we are, and there's this long straightaway. While he was helping them up at the window of their car, I got out of the patrol car and walked around the back of the car, and as I rounded the back end, I had vaguely noticed the headlights of a vehicle coming from behind but didn't pay much attention. And was facing away from the traffic and not paying close attention to it. And this car was a drunk driver, ran off the road. I remember hearing the rumble strip, that sound it makes when it goes off the road, and then that impact. I had basically my left hip was against our patrol car at the back window, and I remember the sound of that impact and the metal and glass crunching, the rush of wind past your face as that concussion blows by, and I remember something tapping and hitting my left leg, and then the next thing I remember is I was in the ditch looking up at the sky and the brush with pure silence. It was as quiet as it could ever be, and the only thing I could picture was that my partner was standing outside of the vehicle in front of me at the time that happened. And I relate this part of the story to the intro to the war movie with Tom Hanks, Saving Private Ryan, and they storm the beach. And there's a point where explosive goes off, and then the film goes silent, and you can see him looking around, looking at all this chaos going on, but there's no sound, and it's very, very powerful point in the movie. And that's exactly what was going on. My body had shut down, it was complete silence, and I'm screaming at the top of my lungs at my partner's name, and I'm not hearing anything come back, not even hearing my own voice. I was able to scramble up from the side of the road and get up. This movie, yeah, it feels like a movie at times. Story transitioned to where my partner had the same thing. He got hit by the van because this guy hit our patrol car, pushed us into the van. The passengers in the van were thrown around because they were sitting there unseat belted. Their van hit my partner, knocked him in the brush. And
so at least he got knocked off the roadway.
Yeah, he didn't get crushed between cars. Those are things that could have happened to both of us, and we just by seconds were away from being in between cars. We're on the side of the road with lights on. Nobody died in this crash. The driver that hit us was ejected from his vehicle and suffered major injuries, but ultimately survived and went through his whole court process after that. Lingering back injuries and things that happen, you know, there's stuff that's hard to recover from, but the mental part of it is the hardest. But it's important that I got back out to share the story, to educate others and help keep them safe. And I love the work that I do. I'm just fortunate that I was here. A backstory on that too is that with the Highway Patrol, we had lost 6 officers in the few months leading up to that. 2 officers had just been hit in the last 30 days, hit and killed with our department in Southern California. So it was a hard time for our department, and it was on everybody's minds at the time was staying safe, and we got lucky that we were around to still tell the story. So
yeah, the drunk driving syndrome, I mean, it's really tough to anticipate and try to take care of that. I mean, fortunate you were there rather than like somewhere where there was a cliff,
yeah,
or a tree, or those types of things that could have really changed the outcome significantly.
Oh yeah, a lot of locations that would have made it different. And if the van, if we hadn't been there, maybe this guy drives into the back of the van because they have their flashers on. So this old myth of, you know, flies to to a light,
moths
to a light. Yeah,
keep it up on like board that. Here, babe.
You know, maybe we were there to help save them and make it less serious for them. But you know, we have lighting on our cars, and we talk about and train. It's not a shall turn your lights off, but it's recommended to turn those rear deck lights off and not be a beacon for a drunk driver to drive into you. But I was a proponent of using them and had the rear deck lights on and everything. And it's something that I've reconsidered over the years of, do I want to be more visible or make myself invisible on the side of the road? The point of all that would be, if you're on the side of the road, if you're outside of your car, pay attention to what's behind you and what's coming towards you. Keep an eye on that traffic and stay safe and off to the side or in your car, seat belted.
I would think hearing the rumbles, the slow natives is what I always think of it. You know, the ant and the elephant. Rumble, rumble, rumble. That's got to get, I mean, whether you're a construction guy, somebody walking on the road, somebody's off to the side of the road, you guys, that's a heart-stopping sound that can't be replicated.
Yeah. In most cases, it's something that at least is an alert for us that we're like, oh, somebody drifted off the road. But when you've been through that experience, it has that extra thing in the back of your head where the hair stands up on your neck and you're hyper alert at that time, but better than not being aware at all.
How long did it take for you to kind of normalize it?
Well, I had to go back to work about a week later. I mean, I did go back to work. I don't say I had to. I was back at work a week later, a little sore, a little cut up, but I would say that helped to transition through working through that, because I think if I'd just sat around the house and thought about it all the time, getting back into it helped a lot to normalize things and make sure that I still had safe behaviors on the side of the road.
Yeah. What about your partner?
Same. Yeah. We talk a lot, and we're still, we don't work together here anymore. He's in Sacramento area, but we're still, we always have that between us, but we were good friends before. And sometimes we call and we talk about it again and just to stay fresh and
remember lessons learned.
Yeah, not to keep it bubbled up inside of you or to keep bringing it up for anxiety, but to remind ourselves that because he's back on the road doing patrol, and it's important that he remembers safety.
Everybody remembers.
Yeah.
Oh, looks like the crabs are migrating. Hey, I saw three crab boats going out this morning. It was so cool.
It's time for a crab sandwich today, I believe.
Yeah, or crab bouillie or something.
Sourdough and some crab.
Yeah, we don't need to be fancy here.
Okay.
But thanks for coming by, bud.
Thanks for having me.
See everybody tomorrow.